What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp, Backstage Report Podcast. You know the drill. About 15, 20, 25 minutes of exclusive news, injury updates, contract updates, stats, all that good stuff here at FightfulSelect.com. I want to thank you guys so much for continuing to support us, continuing to subscribe to Fightful Select. It means the world to me. It would also mean the world if you just let the world know that you are. I can't tell you how important that is. Let's go ahead and get into it. Plenty of COVID news with WWE. Not a lot of a shocker here. It seems to be a weekly article here. But there was a lot of frustration about NXT's handling of COVID protocols heading into Halloween Havoc. Again, Indy Hartwell was pulled from that show in a planned appearance, and several in NXT that we spoke to were frustrated how things have been affected for a story that many looked at in such a positive light. As mentioned recently, NXT's ability to get Hartwell over without even having her on screen was acclaimed by talent that we spoke to. And frustration was kind of compounded when classes resumed and the same protocol was kept in place, which is not daily testing. Everybody that I speak to says it's just a matter of time before the next outbreak and then the next and then the next and then the next. So this weekend, that was actually a bit of a conversation at the AEW tapings, because AEW does the rapid testing. Obviously, it's not 100% certain or 100% effective, but they have tested all along the way. And while poking around, talking to some talent at Full Gear, I had multiple people tell me that there's at least one person, maybe more, within WWE that actually got their first COVID tests when they visited an AEW show. Now, the people that I spoke to in AEW said it was probably Double or Nothing weekend or maybe around then, but there were people in WWE who had not been tested by WWE at that point, because keep in mind, they didn't test till June. And then when they did, they realized, oh shit, we've got a giant outbreak. So there are wrestlers in WWE that got their first tests for COVID in AEW. That's wild. That is unbelievable. Well, AEW's got some other stuff going on. As I mentioned last week, Lee Johnson was added to the Nightmare family. It would appear that he signed to AEW. I was set for an interview with Lee several weeks ago. After that Ben Carter match, I hit him up. But the day of, I was told that we'd have to go through All Elite Wrestling PR. That is usually a sign that someone has been signed. Now, Johnson hasn't been featured heavily on Dynamite, but since then we've learned that he was not the only signing from Dark. We were told that multiple AEW Dark regulars are under agreements of some sort, but weren't specified if they were short-term, long-term, or a set number of appearances. And Max Caster and Anthony Bowens ended up being a couple of those. If some of you who don't watch AEW but pay close attention to Fightful recognize the name of Anthony Bowens, it's because about a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, I did a major long-form feature on this guy. It's really good. I'm so happy about how that ended up. And it was very obvious that he was going to end up being something special. Actually, I had a conversation with a higher-up in the AEW office last year, and I brought his name up. And the funny thing is, he was on WWE's radar for a long time. When we did our feature on Anthony Bowens in spring of 2019, I did some poking around. I didn't just talk to Bowens for that feature. I talked to people in WWE. I talked to people that he trained with and trained under. I did a lot of that. And one person in WWE that would know said that WWE did have interest in him and was supposed to get back to him as far back as 2018, but just didn't. And they were puzzled by the situation. They were so confused as to why he wasn't there under a contract. So, in regards to Bowen's signing with AEW, I'm told that it was made official before November. It was announced first week in November, but it was finalized in October at least. And then WWE had been reaching out to guys like Anthony Bowens and other AEW Dark and New Japan Strong talent. In fact, I heard a couple weeks ago that WWE at least had interest in Alex Zane. I don't know if he has signed there. He has finished up on the indies, according to at least advertisement, but I had heard WWE did have interest in him, so we'll see how that goes. I wouldn't be surprised if they did. He was another guy I reached out to for an interview And we had talked about doing one for a while, but or mentioned that maybe we'd do it in person because we live 40, 45 minutes away from each other. But COVID prevented that, and now I would imagine WWE's going to prevent that. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him pop up there, but I do not know if he's been signed. I do know that Gallows, Anderson, and Rocky Romero talked to me about the future of Talkin' Choppa Mania. Gallows said he's already had some conversations about what would happen. He wants to have the show in front of a live audience whenever the world opens up, but Carl Anderson specified they already have a main event plan for that. Just a heads up, myself, Jeremy Lambert, Rob Wilkins will be watching that live after our SmackDown review on Friday. So make sure you guys come and check that out. Mance Warner, he was not at the latest MLW tapings for their restart after the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic. He has been stuck in a contract dispute with MLW of late and has interest from multiple companies, but MLW commented last month and said that Warner remained under a deal, but it is worth noting that both Brian Pillman Jr. and Davey Boy Smith Jr. had contractual disagreements with MLW, but did appear at the tapings. EC3 was not at the Impact tapings. He is now working with Ring of Honor through at least the end of the year. He has finished up with Impact Wrestling for the time being after spending the last few months there. There have also been talks of him creating a new project separate of both companies. I am not sure if he has a contract with either ROH or if he had one with Impact at all, but I do know that for now, he's finished up. Zicky Dice has not finished up quite yet. His contract status has been messy over the last few months, to say the least. In June, Billy Corgan informed NWA Talent that if they didn't believe in the vision of NWA or the direction, they could ask out of their contracts. But nobody really got released. Royce Isaac asked out, and they let the last month and a half ride out of his deal, and they had the rights to roll that over for a couple months, but they didn't, so they just let him go. Zicky Dice had the television title. He would end up working a couple of UWN primetime live shows. There was the match where he and Effie got beat by the Pope and Watts, and then the Pope defeated Zicky to win the NWA television title, so he has dropped that title now, and I would imagine he's going to hit the bricks once his contract expires at the end of December, but he is still very much there. Now, thus far, this year, James Storm's contract expired, but we have seen him work UWN. Zicky Dice has asked for his release. Royce Isaacs asked out of NWA, and they sort of just let him walk in that regard. We have seen Thunder Rosa pop up in other companies, but she is still under contract. Allison Kay's contract has expired, but she's still competing for the NWA title. And you've got Serena Deeb from AEW as NWA Women's Champion. Also, Ricky Starks hit the bricks as well. Make of that what you will. I do know that there have been disagreements and heat between Zicky Dice and Nick Aldis in the past that were well known within the NWA locker room. Yeah. So I just mentioned a lot of companies working together. You've seen AEW and NWA and all that stuff. So Rocky Romero and Carl Anderson seem to think that the bridge between Impact and New Japan will be gapped pretty soon. Anderson told us personally that he thinks by the summer of next year, big things will have happened by then. Anderson said that he and Gallows are still really close to the New Japan higher-ups, and Ghetto told him to stop saying fuck on TV before they left. I felt that was very important to note. Romero said that Chris Bay being involved in the Super J Cup is important in rebuilding that relationship between New Japan and Impact, and everybody is happy taking small steps, and says that Impact and New Japan are friendlier than they've been in a long time and thinks there's a huge respect there. Now, I have talked to Davey Boy Smith Jr. about this, and Davey Boy Smith Jr. says, people don't forget things in Japan, especially New Japan. He asked to work for Impact last year. They said no. They blamed Jeff Jarrett. Jeff Jarrett had not been there in years. But what had happened in the last decade or so, 2009, TNA, then under Dixie Carter, switched an IWGP tag title without the permission of New Japan. The next year, and really through 2011, you had the bad booking of Okada. And then I think a few years after that, you know, you had the bad dealings with Jeff Jarrett. I guess maybe he was just synonymous with Impact, and that's why he got the blame. But then last year, I think it was, they, or maybe it was this year, they kicked New Japan off of Access. That's not a great way to build that relationship, I don't think. Don't think that's a great one. Retribution. As of the end of October, there were no plans on adding another female member of Retribution. The word among talent was that Mercedes Martinez had extended her desire to no longer be a part of the angle and was removed from the group before they all signed new contracts. There were briefly some names tossed around from NXT as potentially joining the group before deciding to stick with things as they are for the time being. Spoke with Shane Taylor. I should mention that during a recent conversation with EC3, he told me that Shane Taylor was the only person up as early as him to get into the gym when they were in the ROH bubble during their set of tapings. I could tell there was a really big sense of respect there in that regard, even though they're competitors on screen. And they're both from the Cleveland area. Speaking of that, I asked Shane Taylor who his dream partner would be, and he said Eric of the Viking Raiders, another guy from that area. The two have remained close, and Eric is actually the godfather of Shane Taylor's children. I had a ball talking to Shane Taylor. You guys may notice, I try to talk to him at least once a year. Last year, I went out of my way when I was in Toronto. Ring of Honor said, who do you want? And they made it, they kind of put out there that I could have anybody. I wanted to talk to Shane Taylor. He is a better promo than most people realize. He's got more to say than most people realize. He's a harder worker than many give him credit for. He is very good. He's very good. And while he seems soft-spoken, out of character and all that, he tells me that the character we see on screen is what his friends say, okay, that's you. To strangers and to media, he's a little more introverted. But around his friends and even on screen, he's got that intimidating persona. He's very confident in himself and is not afraid to speak his mind. We spoke about ROH Unauthorized. If you guys don't know what that show is, you had Gary Juster, who's booked Towns for All In, or not booked Towns, but helped book the event for All In and did stuff with Ring of Honor and WCW. It was him and referee Todd Sinclair and Ian Riccaboni and Colt Cabana taking on Shane Taylor and his buddies. And he put over Todd Sinclair and Ian Riccaboni and said that he prides himself as an entertainer and likes to be able to prove that he can do stuff like that, but said that he did not lose that match. Brian Johnson did. He left. That was a fun talk because when you got a serious guy like Shane Taylor, you don't have a lot of lighter stuff to talk about. So I thought that was a whole lot of fun. And again, keep your eye out on him. We have a lot of injury updates. Flamita, of course, has his torn meniscus in Ring of Honor. Matt Mikowski pulled from a November 6th indie show. Matt Jackson really went into detail about his knee injury to me on the post-show scrum Saturday night. Gosh, it feels so much longer than that now because it's been a long day. And I'll directly quote him because I asked him if it was a work, if it was a shoot, anything like that. He said, quote, "It's a very real injury I've been dealing with. It's been a rough year for me. I come back after all that time off in the lockdown. The first thing I do is break my rib when I jumped out of the dugout. I dealt with that for a second. That sucked. Then we did the Falls Count Anywhere match between Butcher and the Blade, and I decided it'd be a good idea to jump off the entrance set. There's only concrete. That was not a good idea. For a while, I was having a hard time walking at home, and I was hobbling around. I thought I may have had a hairline fracture in my fibula or something. My amazing wife, who is also watching this, noticed I was having a hard time getting around, and Doc Sampson ordered an MRI to see what was going on. Turns out it wasn't my fibula. It was soft tissue. It was the back of my knee, my MCL, and after we looked at the MRI, I had a slight tear. Nothing at the time needed surgery. The most interesting part was that I'd had a thinning of my ACL, which they also consider a slight tear. I haven't had any pain in my ACL, just wear and tear. I remember thinking back, have I ever hurt my ACL? And I remember wrestling back in 2008. I banged my knee up and had a hard time with it for a second. That's the only time I can ever recall hurting my left knee in that area. The MCL injury is brand new. It's something I've been dealing with and rehabbing. I've been taping it before every match, and this is my 9th match with the injury. Honestly, I felt pretty good, all things considered. Our medical staff is amazing. They'd never send me out there if they weren't confident with me and how I felt, and I know my body as well. All things considered, I feel pretty good about it. The doctors feel pretty good about it. I'm going to take every precaution possible. If it starts bothering me, we'll see what happens and we'll do the right thing, but I'm not too worried about it. Now, this was, to me, a very important question because we've got a situation over in NXT, and this isn't taking a shot at NXT. Karrion Kross had to vacate the title, and as soon as Finn Balor won it, not only was he out, but for about a week, Kyle O'Reilly was out too. But a whole lot of injuries right now. And champions having to vacate and take time off, and who knows if that would be the case for Matt Jackson. The benefit of the situation there is, if he does, they can work around that, get the titles off of them. But that was the basis of my question to Matt Jackson. Is he going to have to drop the title? How will that work? Now, he said this was his 9th match since having that injury. If you go back 9 matches, we're talking mid-July. 9 matches ago was July 30th, and he didn't wrestle between the 16th and the 30th. So, mid to late July, he's been dealing with this. That's 3.5 months. Man, that's unreal. That is unreal. And, he sold a back injury for a very, very long time. So, best wishes to Matt Jackson. I hope that he heals up soon, and I appreciate the very, very insightful answer that he provided. Matt Hardy returned at AEW Full Gear, as you saw in the Elite Deletion. That was a fun match. Alex Shelley, it was revealed his injury was at Bound for Glory 2020. You have Yoshinobu Kanemaru. He had a knee injury in November. He had to be pulled from a New Japan show. We have some contract updates. Rohit Raju signed a multi-year deal in October with Impact. And Lee Johnson, Max Caster, Anthony Bowens signed with AEW. A huge congrats to those guys. I love seeing people get picked up, even in the unique times that we're living in right now, which can be very scary for people trying to make their impression and get deals. Good on them. Got some stats here. Bobby Lashley is 6 years older than Arn Anderson was when he had his last match before retiring. Lana got put through an announcer's table by Nia Jax for the 7th time. On Raw, Xavier Woods said that Kofi Kingston has had more title reigns than all of Hurt Business combined. That's almost true. Kofi Kingston has had 21 title reigns. Bobby Lashley has had 6. Cedric Alexander has had 3. Shelton Benjamin has had 9. And MVP has had 3 for also a combined 21 title reigns. It is worth noting that several of those Cedric Alexander, Shelton Benjamin title reigns were the 24/7 title. I mean, hey. NXT last Wednesday featured 4 interference or distraction finishes, but they had 5 matches on Wednesday, and 4 of them lasted over 13.5 minutes. Dakota Kai versus Ember Moon went 16-20. Kushida has not been pinned in any of his last 5 matches. Rey Mysterio wrestled his first match since August on Friday. Cody Rhodes' TNT title reign was the shortest of all time. Nobody has held the title for longer than 82 days thus far. Natalya has not won a match on SmackDown since March 2018. Ruby Riott got her first win in singles action since August on Main Event. Her last win on SmackDown was way back in February 2018. Hikaru Shida is now the longest reigning All Elite Wrestling Women's Champion of all time. FTR and the Young Bucks, of course, competed against each other for the first time ever at Full Gear. Shane Helms popped up on the Elite Deletion. He has now appeared on programming for WCW, WWE, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor, and AEW. I saw some people make the argument that he also appeared for ECW. Come on now. We ain't counting that. However, if you want to talk some televised shows, you can say IGF, you can say Lucha Libre USA. He's appeared for all of those. He has had a very long, prolific career and is still doing it. So big credit to Shane Helms. Also, he's appeared in deletion segments for WWE, Impact, and now AEW. Gangrel showed up again. He's appeared on cable, syndication, or traditional pay-per-view wrestling each of the last 5 decades. That goes all the way back to the 80s. Now, here's a little bit of an interesting aspect of that stat. So he popped up for Ring of Honor and AEW this year. So yeah, that gets the 20s, right? In the 2000s, we know that he did stuff with WWE. He did the Raw 15th anniversary match. He did a handicap match on SmackDown in 04. We know that he was all over the place in the 90s. A lot of people don't realize that he wrestled in the 2010s and in the 1980s on TV. In the 2010s, he was actually on a program called Paragon Pro Wrestling. And if you've never heard of that being on TV, don't worry. A lot of people didn't. It was on Pop TV before Impact Wrestling was over there. It was very odd. They had a lot of licensed music being used on that show. No way that was allowed to happen. He did also appear on West Coast Wrestling Connection, which aired on a local PDX TV station in, I want to say, Oregon. But yeah, that took place in the 2010s. He also did TNA stuff in 02 and 03, so he appeared on television then. But the 1980s, he actually appeared on NWA TV and WWF TV in the 80s. I did an enhancement story with him talking about his match with Big Boss Man, but he faced Abdul the Butcher and the Midnight Express on WCW, NWA TV in the 80s. Of course, he also worked New Japan. He would go on and do a lot of stuff. USWA, WWF, WCW. The man has been around. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate you all. I'm filming this in the wee hours of Monday morning, so hope it's worth it for you guys. Let the world know that you like FightfulSelect.com. I can't tell you how important that is. When you go to message boards, when you go to places that we might not have a great reach at, and you sing our praises, it means a lot. Thank you. We're out.